Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days. Jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, coming to you today to preview a second round series between the Boston Celtics and the Washington Wizards. With me is Sam Packard. I'm John Corrales. We're the Rain and Jays. Thank you for listening. A bonus podcast today. Sam, before we start, any final thoughts on the Bulls series?
It was funny that they gave up so early, but it's everything kind of came down. It's like they started playing like a one seed, and not that surprised. Also, it was very amusing watching Brad Stevens' mouth shut up when the fans were chanting "Fire Hoiberg."
That was good. That was good. Yeah, nice comeback for the guys. I feel like games one and two were a bit of an aberration. Looking back on it, that the Isaiah Thomas tragedy really did have a huge impact on games one and two. When he came back to Chicago and had and showed that he was kind of getting into a better mood, and it kind of lifted the team and they started to play a lot better. Still not great. Some guys, Jay Crowder, would like to see his shooting somehow return. We're going to need it coming up, and some other things that there are now question marks. So a nice, I guess, what did Matt Moore call it today? A backdoor sweep or something when he came back to win four in a row for the Celtics. Now, out of some stupidity by the NBA, Cleveland and Toronto, Cleveland sitting there waiting for after a sweep, Toronto, which finished off its series on Thursday, they don't play until, what, Monday, right? The Celtics play 36 hours after winning their series, and Washington's in the same boat. Why couldn't they flip-flop that schedule? I'm completely dumbfounded by this.
No, I don't really get it either. The only one thing that I've heard is that in case the Hawks won last night, and in case the either of those series went seven games, they didn't want to start the new round of the East series before ending the last one, so they kind of had to just schedule in the Raptors-Cavs series to start on Monday just in case. I guess you could argue that they pushing the start of Wizards-Celtics to Tuesday, but then the NBA, they're going to want to have those primetime day games on ABC, so I think that's the primary reason why they're having them start so early. But you're right. It doesn't make sense for a series that ended before the Celtics and Wizards series to start after it.
Yeah, but at least both teams are in the same boat, and they know each other very well. So they're just going to have to deal with it, I guess. It's annoying, but it is what it is. So the Celtics and the Wizards, this is what we asked for. We wanted this series. After all the stuff that went down during the regular season, the funeral game, the nose boop, all of the little things that happened between the two teams all season long, now these two teams, with a general distaste for one another, get to play probably seven games against one another. So let's go ahead and break it down. I think the first thing that comes to mind is Isaiah Thomas and his shooting. And game one, he's going home. His sister's funeral is today. We're recording this on Saturday afternoon. Isaiah Thomas right now, as we speak, is probably at a funeral for his sister, who would have turned 23 next week. Now he's going to fly cross country with that on his mind. Everything's fresh. And then hop into a series where and now basketball wise, he's been struggling with his shot. What do you think he's going to, I mean, can we expect him to be on point at all?
No, it's going to be tough for him, especially with the matinee 1 p.m. start. It doesn't help with kind of travel times and jet lag. I don't know what to expect from Isaiah Thomas. I mean, he did come out in game one of the Bulls series and scored 33 points. Just kind of outside of that entire, like, the issue surrounding his sister and kind of the personal issues, a thing to know is just he wasn't that great from beyond the arc in the first series. And one of the kind of major reasons that he was able to make this huge leap this season was his efficiency from three. And he was not making anything. And for the Celtics to really kind of compete with a next level team, kind of like the Wizards, I mean, the Wizards are so much better than the Bulls and have such a more potent offense. Isaiah is really going to need to be able to hit from three. And I don't know. Certainly, I don't think the kind of cross-country travel plus the kind of emotional weight that goes with that is going to help that issue. So I don't know what to expect from Isaiah in game one, let alone throughout the entire series, because if he's continuing to kind of be 1-for-8 or 1-for-10 from three-point line, I don't think the Celtics really have a long-term chance, because the Wizards are going to score.
Yeah, the Wizards are going to score. They're averaging 109 points per game in the playoffs. I mean, 106 points per game in the playoffs. Down from 109, but still a lot of points. Isaiah Thomas is shooting 20% from three so far in the playoffs over six games. Here's a guy that shot 38% for the season. So I think obviously he's struggling. He's being played a lot more physical. The Bulls picked him up full court, so he's working harder to bring the ball up. They were hitting him as much as they can. He's playing a lot more minutes, so it's a guy. He's played 34 minutes per game during the regular season. 35, up to 35, but that's thrown off by, I think, yesterday sitting the whole fourth quarter. He's been playing a lot of minutes. A lot of that stuff is wearing him down, and I think the emotional issue has taken away some of his focus. He's uncharacteristically missing a lot of free throws. He shot 81% from the line, which is still good, but he shot 91% from the line for the regular season. So you can see he's struggling just overall with his shot, his focus. And yesterday, I just saw a lot of him chasing his shot, just instead of working the ball around. They got an offensive rebound. They kicked it out to him. He just took a quick three. He's chasing opportunities to get shots, to try to see it fall through. I think just get to the rim, get to that line, work it out at the line, and work through the offense. Don't take those pull-up jumpers in transition, and those typically for him are low percentage shots anyway. That's not the thing that he needs to get that shot going. So I'd like to see Isaiah calm down, work the offense, and get set shots, catch and shoot opportunities to try and get that shot back on track.
Yeah, the pull-up threes in transition feel a whole lot worse when they're not going in at a high rate or at all.
During the season, he was 28%. Kevin O'Connor tweeted out, during the season, 28%. And it's worse during the playoffs. So.
Oh, yeah. It's just not a great shot in any sense of the offensive basketball. I think a good sign for the Celtics is that they weren't entirely reliant on Isaiah's offense in this Bulls series. And I know, like I mentioned it before, the Bulls are not the same team as the Wizards, but I thought they did a really good job of passing the ball around, getting open shots for players not named Isaiah. I felt like the corner threes were open the entire series. And even when Isaiah was on the bench, I thought the bench did a lot better job of generating offensive opportunities with Rozier, Smart, and Kelly Olynyk, the trio that still needs a nickname. But I think it's a good sign for the Celtics because in the regular season, it was kind of doom and gloom for all any time Isaiah and Al Horford spent on the bench. But I think the way their offense has been playing with him not playing at the same exact level that he did in the regular season is a good sign because it shows that the offense can still score points with if he's having a down night. But you mentioned this earlier. Jay Crowder is going to have to step up and kind of get back to scoring, I think, over 15 points a game. Al Horford's going to have to basically continue to do the same, and Avery Bradley's going to continue to do the same. We're going to have to get just great efforts from those three guys in terms of scoring because it's just going to be a track meet, I feel like. With the way John Wall is playing right now, his ability to just go off and score more than 30 points a game, what would he have, 42 the other night against the Hawks to close them out? I just think they're going to need contributions from every single player. It felt like in the Bulls series there was times in which they could have like a down quarter or something like that and kind of still maintain the lead or still get the win, especially in the last four games. But against the Wizards, it's not going to be so easy. So you're going to need to see them kind of hit as many three-pointers as they did in Game 6.
Yeah, you're looking at guys now that were good shooters during the regular season. Crowder, 40% shooter from three during the regular season, 27% from three for the playoffs, which that's – I don't know what is going on with these guys generally with their shooting, but that – they just need to – I don't know. It seems so simple. It goes back to the Doc Rivers. It's a make-miss-lead. You got to make the shots. If you've got an open shot, these guys need to be hitting at their regular season percentages to win this series. That's just how it's going to go. If they shoot the way they shot against the Bulls, they're not going to get past the Wizards. They're just not. Al Horford is kind of the aberration for the Celtics, that he's been the one guy that's been able to get better in the playoffs. And thankfully, aside from just silencing his critics, he's been amazing. And he's 54% from three. That's insane. His advanced numbers, Al Horford's advanced numbers, are spectacular. He's increased his player efficiency rating, get that right, from 17.7, which is good, to 25.4, which is elite. That's just elite level player efficiency. His true shooting percentage jumped up. It's up to 68%, and in the regular season it was at 55%. So he's increased his true shooting percentage by 13 points. That's just a function of him playing the five against Robin Lopez, who I keep wanting to say Brooke, and I have to stop myself, against Robin Lopez, and spreading the floor out, running pick and rolls with Isaiah, varying types of pick and rolls. And I guess now the question is, since we're talking about Al Horford, does this continue for this series? Does Amir Johnson get back into the lineup this series, or does Brad Stevens go with Gerald Green or somebody else this series?
I don't think Amir definitely doesn't get his starting role back. I'm kind of curious to see if Gerald Green will continue to get the start. He does have a 4-0 playoff record as a starter. but the Wizards kind of present a similar problem in that they go small as well. Is it Markieff Morris or Marcus Morris?
They got Keith.
They got Keith. He's a much better player than Mirotić, but he's a very good small ball four. And I don't know how much I have faith in Gerald Green kind of defending him early. I think it might be a situation where you go to someone like Kelly Olynyk, which is a lineup we saw them use in the fourth quarters of a lot of those games. But I think for them to generate that offense, they have to go four in or even five, like, I mean, four out, or even five out. They have to spread the floor, and having Amir Johnson just kind of clogging the lane is not going to be helpful. You have to have, try to get Marcin Gortat out on the perimeter guarding those Isaiah pick and rolls, maybe get him in foul trouble, because the Wizards don't have a lot of depth when it comes to their front court. So I think Amir Johnson is going to kind of be reserved to that role of cheerleader, but it should be more of the same for the Celtics, playing those small ball lineups. But I don't know if Gerald Green is necessarily the answer. I think it might be Kelly Olynyk. But it might be the situation where they start Gerald and then he plays like 5 minutes. And if he's shooting well, he stays in the game. And if he's not, he kind of goes back to the bench. I think we saw that in game six. So I think but the Celtics got to remain small, because that's kind of the best matchup for them.
Yeah, I agree. There's going to be some continuing of that small ball in some form. I like the Kelly Olynyk idea. If you look at what the Wizards are going to throw out there, you got Wall, Beal, Porter, Gortat, and Morris. So Bradley is going to probably start on Wall. And that means maybe Crowder slides over to Beal and you hide Isaiah on Otto Porter. And then you put Horford on Gortat. And yeah, who guards Markieff Morris? I would say if Gerald Green is in there, they'll probably post Morris up a bunch and go that route. And he's a pretty good scorer. So there's no reason for them to not go in there and try to take advantage of that mismatch. If it's Olynyk, Morris might try. I think if you put Olynyk in there, maybe Morris just tries to do too much and tries to drive by Olynyk because he thinks he's quicker. Well, he is quicker than Olynyk. But Olynyk does play, as you like to say, good positional defense. And he will, I trust Olynyk to mostly stay in front of Morris and not really get burned too much. So that being said, I think that Stevens will probably stick with what worked and throw Gerald out there just to see. And if that happens early, then yeah, I agree. Quick hook. And then we'll see what he does. Maybe this is an opportunity to get Jarebko out there. Maybe this is a Jarebko series.
I like either the idea of – I feel like anyone but Gerald Green is who I'm leaning towards for starting right now. But we've seen Jarebko come in – I remember it was against the Rockets, I think. He started for Amir earlier in the season. He had some spot starts, and he's done a good job of playing that small ball for. He's the high-energy guy, and if you put him as a starter, it doesn't really mess up your rotations in terms of, like, bringing Smart and Kelly in to kind of anchor that second unit. So I like the Jarebko idea. I think starting is like the, I guess the less important thing is it's going to go down to how they finish. And I'm feeling like Marcus Smart's going to come in. They're going to go to that IT and D lineup. You're going to have Crowder guarding Morris. And then some combination of Beal and Smart Wow, I always get confused with Bradley Beal and Avery Bradley. I hate talking about both of them in the same game. It's going to be the entire series.
Yeah.
You guys know what I'm saying. I think the huge question is, how do you kind of hide Isaiah? Because we saw, I mean, this is what every single team is going to try and do to him when he's playing defense. Are they just going to stick him on Otto Porter? Otto Porter had a pretty good regular season. He wasn't that great in the opening series, but he's still considerably larger than Isaiah Thomas. So I don't know exactly what the Celtics are going to do to try and kind of hide Isaiah on defense, but it's going to be very interesting to see how the Wizards try to attack him. Because we saw in the Bulls, they kind of, with Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler, they had such a considerable size advantage that they were doing a lot of posting on Isaiah, but that just doesn't feel as much of as the Wizards game. So I don't know exactly what their kind of attack will be, but you know, because Isaiah is 5'6", they're going to do something to try and get after him. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they attack.
I think you can't really put Isaiah on Beal or Wall, because you're asking to get torched. Wall is really upping his game in the playoffs. He's too fast. He's too quick, and you can't just have John Wall getting past Isaiah Thomas every possession, getting into the paint, because that kills you. That just puts your entire defense into rotation, and then he'll become like the best point guard in the world. He'll have 15 assists, and you'll just get crushed. You can't do that. So you have to have somebody like Avery Bradley that can stay in front of him and at least try to force him into jumpers and limit his ability to get to the rim as best as you can. So that leaves Bradley Beal and Otto Porter. Well, I don't think you can put him on Beal either, because Beal can get super hot, super fast. He's 6'5". You can shoot right over the top of Isaiah Thomas and not really worry about it. So that leaves, I think, Otto Porter. And now Otto Porter is 6'8". So you're saying, why do you put the smallest guy on the floor up on a 6'8 swingman? Because I would rather take my chances at Otto Porter trying to back down Isaiah Thomas. Now, Isaiah Thomas is small, but he's strong. He'll get low, and he won't let you totally back him down. So if Otto Porter wants to try and install the Washington offense, this high-powered, fast-paced Washington offense, if he wants to sit there in the post and try to back down Isaiah Thomas, fine. I'll take Otto Porter backing down Isaiah Thomas the whole game, because that will not let Wall get into a flow. It'll not let Beal get into a flow. So that will, I think, stall their whole offense. And what will end up happening is Beal and Wall will start looking for their shots at bad times, and everybody will start to go one-on-one. And that's what you want. You want those guys to try to go one-on-one. You don't want a free-flowing Washington offense. And then I don't think that would... The Porter backing down Isaiah in the posting is going to happen too much. More likely, they'll try to set picks and switch and get switches where you get Isaiah on that matchup, and then you see, maybe you just start going under screens and dare Otto Porter to shoot or whatever. You know, you just hope that if Otto Porter is the guy that beats you, then Otto Porter is the guy that beats you. I don't think he can beat the Celtics. He can certainly get hot. But that's the chance you got to take. If you're looking at the way this all breaks down, as far as the starting lineups go, that's how it all breaks down. I'll take the Isaiah matchup there and figure out what Washington decides to do and adjust to that. Then, if you can hang, all I want the starters to do is hang with Washington's starters, because then you can get into Washington's bench, and then that's where I think the Celtics are going to win this series. The Celtics bench, which hasn't been the strongest bench in the world, but I think they can take advantage of Bogdanovich defensively. They can take advantage of Jason Smith defensively. They can take advantage of who else do they have? What's his name?
Jan Bienaimé, Jennings.
Brandon Jennings defensively. They can certainly do a lot of damage to those guys, where the Celtics, if they come out of the first quarter or whatever, the 8-minute mark in the first quarter, if it's kind of close and Jennings checks in, you can attack that matchup. So I think you hang with the starters, and you got to hope that your bench can step up, that guys like Kelly Olynyk, hopefully Rozier has keeps going. If Green gets in, get some bench minutes that he can get cooking, that Smart can come in and do some damage. Like, those are the guys, and just attack those guys defensively and get out in transition. And I think that's where the Celtics have an opportunity to win.
I disagree. I think the Wizards bench is what's going to actually tilt the series towards the Wizards. I think they are not as good defensively, but this isn't the same kind of Wizards bench that it was for the entire season. It's the kind of midseason acquisitions of Jennings and Bogdanovich, I think, were really great moves by the Wizards, because it just makes their scoring off the bench that much better. With the Celtics and Wizards only really played one game with the kind of full complement of players, and in that game, the Celtics still won. It was mostly because John Wall had only scored 16 points and was 4-for-10, wasn't great. But in that game, Bogdanovich scored 14 points, Jason Smith scored 13 points, and Jennings had 10 points. I think that the Wizards bench is a lot better in terms of scoring than they were previously. And we've seen times in the regular season where the Celtics bench have really struggled to score. So you, I can think of a situation where you're, it's, it goes right back to those kind of needing Isaiah and Al Horford to keep the offense going. So that those minutes kind of scare me from a Celtics perspective, because although they're not as good defensively, I'm not sure if the Celtics have kind of the volume scores that the Wizards have, and it feels like Jason Smith is going to hit probably 4 threes per game that just really annoy the shit out of you. And Brandon Jennings is a pretty solid ball handler and decent player. So I think they have some, the Wizards have the advantage on the bench. So that I think that's actually where their advantage is going to come in. Because I think the two starting lineups will kind of play to a draw, and it'll kind of, those bench minutes will end up being huge.
Yeah. I can see your point about the scoring. I think that the Celtics, and keep in mind, we're not going bench versus bench either, that it's going to be bench players with Avery Bradley, and maybe, you know, you stagger Al Horford and he goes in there. So it's going to be like a few bench guys, but not all bench guys. So there's going to be some level of, you know, if Jennings is in, then Marcus Smart will be able to guard him. So I'm not too worried about that necessarily. I think that their scoring, their shooting can be neutralized. I really do. And so I think that the Celtics are finding a rhythm, and I think that their bench is starting to kind of figure out a little bit more how to play with the new rotations. So I like our chances. I think that Wizards bench defensively is bad enough that the Celtics bench, whichever combination is in there, can take advantage of those matchups and score a lot. So, and I trust the Celtics more defensively. I think the Celtics defensively can limit those guys. And I think that the Celtics on offense can take advantage of those deficiencies. I do agree with you though on Jason Smith. I am slightly afraid of his 3-point shooting, and just one of those, like, if the Celtics are having like one of those bad rotation nights, that's going to be a problem. But I think what we're getting at here with both of these teams is that they're pretty damn close. This is a really, really good matchup. And it's, I know it's the 1-4 matchup, but really it's the Celtics got that one seed because Cleveland just kind of backed down. And I think Washington could easily have been a third seed. Like these two teams this could be a 2-3 matchup going on right here. So they really are pretty evenly matched. It may come down to, go ahead.
Oh no, I absolutely agree. This Washington team started something like 2-8 or something to start the season. They could have had a much better record without that, and kind of they were playing really, really good basketball at the time. So I mean, the regular season worked out the way it did, but these teams are very evenly matched, and we saw that them splitting two games in the regular season. So I think it's in all likelihood, I'd be kind of surprised if it doesn't go 7 games.
So what I was going to say is the regular season was basically home court. Celtics won at home twice. Washington won at home twice. They, like you mentioned earlier, there was really only one game where they played at full strength, though. And that was the last game at home the Celtics won, 110-102. As you mentioned, Wall had a pretty terrible game. But he's, you know, how many terrible games is he going to have in the regular season, in the postseason? So I wouldn't count on that happening. So for the Celtics to win this series, kind of recapping here, we need Jay Crowder. We need this dude to come back and give us 15, 16 points, something like that. We need somebody on the bench to come up big with, you know, maybe a couple of guys to come up with 10, 12, 14 point games. We need to limit their clean looks. We need to make everything tough on them because they can get hot fast. We need to rebound at least somewhat well and not give them easy putbacks. And then I think it just might come down to who's got home court. Washington's not great on the road. So...
But you know the Celtics are going to lose one of these first two games. I can just feel it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a Celtics series if they didn't lose home court advantage almost immediately.
They might. They might fear for game one, strictly because of the Isaiah Thomas travel thing. And as Brad Stevens alluded to after the game six, he told Isaiah, if after the funeral, if you don't feel like you can make it, like if you don't feel like it's right for you, or you just don't feel like you can miss game one. That's more important. So while we expect and the plan is for Isaiah to come back, we don't know if he really is. So there's that kind of possibility there. And even if he does come back, what's he going to be like? Is he going to be able, he will have flown cross country and attended his sister's funeral. What's he going to be like? What's his head? Where's his head going to be? Is he going to physically be able to give the Celtics 38 minutes and be Isaiah? That's going to be hard. That's going to be a tough one. So, but I'm going to stick to the home court. I'm going to go chalk on this one and say Celtics in seven.
My heart says Celtics in seven. And so does my
I'm saying Celtics in seven. It's going to be really, really close. I feel like this is going to be a great, great series that either team, obviously if you're picking one team in seven, the other team could easily win. Washington is playing really well. They are a very talented team. John Wall is amazing. You know, Beal, Porter, all those guys can get hot and burn you. It's not going to be easy at all. And if the Wizards won this series, I would not be surprised. And that's not a, you know, a knock on this Celtics team. I think that they're still really good, but they still have a lot to learn, and they still have pieces. Just nothing's changed with this team over, you know, the past couple of weeks. They're still the same Celtics, but I trust that Stevens has found a way to get these guys to play together. I think that these guys have learned some lessons, so I'm going to say that, yeah, I'm going to say that they hold serve at home. So we'll see.
Here's the more important predictions we have to make. At what point will there be the first scuffle? And who will Marcus Smart be fighting with? I'm going to go with Markieff Morris in the third quarter of the first.
Okay, game. That's a good one. That's a good one. I'm also going to say Smart, but I'm going to say it's Brandon Jennings, and I'll say it'll be before halftime in the first game.
Brandon Jennings and Rozier had a little kind of shoving match in that last game. It feels like any player on either team could really end up in a fight other than Al Horford and I guess Kelly Oubre. I just remember when the Wizards did that funeral game, there was images and like Kelly Oubre was walking into the locker room and just like laughing about how absurd his team's taking that. So I don't think he's about that. Life. I feel like any other player, we see feisty Kelly Olynyk. He might get in there with Markieff Morris if those two are back.
That would be fun.
I'm excited for these two teams because we saw the Bulls and Celtics get pretty chippy after a couple games, and there wasn't really any bad blood there, so it's going to be super intense. I'm really looking forward to this basketball. It's like playoff basketball is the animosity is just so much fun, and these two teams do not like each other, so I'm excited for some sort of basketball violence, you know, not real violence, but some shoving, some dumb double technicals,
yeah.
So the refs feel like they did something and really to, but really it's going to be
okay fun. Before we wrap it up, let's do something fun. Let's do a first round mystery machine. How about that? I wasn't even thinking about it. It just popped into my head right now. First round of the playoffs mystery machine. So shall we start with the obvious? Isaiah and Al Horford are both going to be on the mystery machine.
Yep, put them in.
Okay.
There.
So let's pick the next three.
I think the next one's obvious, it's Avery Bradley.
Yep.
He kind of was the You could make an argument he was the MVP of those final four games with the defense he played on Jimmy Butler and his scoring more than 20 points a game. I think he has to be on there.
Absolutely. Got to put Gerald Green on there. Gets the start, 4-0, always kind of crunk, Gerald Green.
Gerald Green stay crunk.
Which leaves one spot and a lot of good choices.
Oh, my heart, again, wants to go with Terry Rozier because who saw that coming? But I think I'm going to have to go with Feisty Kelly Olynyk.
I like that.
He had a number of good performances, over 10 points in a couple of games, was aggressive, played solid defense, and I just thought he was a very key contributor to that second unit. So I'm going to go with Kelly, but I'm open to suggestions.
I was going to go a little off the board and pick Brad Stevens for just having the balls to put Gerald Green out there as a starter. And for all of us to sit there and say, what are you doing, Brad? Are you nuts? You know, grasping at straws. He's out of ideas. And then you look at what it made them do. You're just like, ah, shit. He's really smart. He's a really smart guy. I think the way he's handled the team in the wake of everything that's been happening has been really great. He's got good perspective, and he's been, and on top of everything, that shut up moment was hilarious. I think that's that's pretty good. I mean, I think, and for winning the series and for shutting a lot of people up about his playoff record, like now he's creeping towards 500. And I think that will, that was just kind of nice. So my fifth guy would be Brad. It's almost like inviting your dad to spring break, but like.
I was going to say that our fifth invitation to the Mystery Machine should definitely be Brad, but we're going to have another one ready because he's going to decline that invitation because he's not going to be associated with any sort of party bus. Yeah.
He will politely decline. He'll thank us for thinking of him and say it's an honor and then decline. And
then we can give it
to Kelly Olynyk. I think it's funny. I think this is so great. And I just want to say, going back to Avery Bradley, I was asked about this on Twitter, so I want to address it. That Avery Bradley, given, you know, throwing some shade at Jimmy Butler, I think was really great. And that little clip of him walking by the camera in the tunnel saying, y'all knew what was going to happen. I was asked if Avery Bradley is having like a more of an attitude lately. And I don't know if it's more of an attitude. I think it's just coming. We're seeing it more because he's been on the podium. But, and Jay brought this up on Twitter when he responded to me, he's usually very respectful about other players. And he did not like Jimmy Butler saying, you don't let Avery Bradley score 20 points on you. He did not like it. So for him to go out and say, yeah, I won that matchup two games in a row, that's saying something. And that's pretty, I love that Avery Bradley. I think that was really, really cool.
He's always had kind of the quiet confidence in himself and his own game. But I think you're right, now it's in the playoffs, the kind of all the exposure, kind of everything's under a microscope. And so, we're all seeing it now, but I feel like that's always been kind of who Avery Bradley was, as this confident player and belief in himself. But now it's, especially if Jimmy Butler or another player is going to talk about him publicly, I think he's not going to be afraid to respond. But you're right, he's been he was magnificent in those last two games. And so for him to kind of step out into the limelight after like just playing that well is great.
Yeah. Let me let those of you who really aren't aware of this in on a not so secret that everybody in the NBA has an ego. Everyone in the NBA has supreme confidence in themselves, especially if you are a guy like Avery Bradley, who is a potential first team all defense type of guy who is a pretty big deal, a pretty big scorer on the Celtics team. And you know, you don't come out there and average, 15, 16, 17 points a game as he has over the past few seasons. You don't come out there and play that kind of basketball while still playing that defense without having some swagger. Now, he might keep it quiet. He might not be like flashy like some guys, but it's there. And in private, when he's on the court with those guys, he's a killer. He is a killer just like everybody else. Marcus Smart is crazy, and you see it Avery Bradley's got that same thing. He just keeps it quiet. It's just when you poke at him, and like Jimmy Butler did, it comes out, but it's always there. Even Brad Stevens, Mr. Aw Shucks, you know, this and that. You know, he knows damn well that he's a top coach. He knows damn well that he, when he draws out of timeout plays and they almost always work, that he knows, he's like, yeah, I got this. Watch this. So all of these guys have an ego. So it's just kind of funny to see a guy like Avery Bradley, who normally keeps it quiet, kind of let it spill over onto the podium, which is fun. Okay. Are we ready? Are we ready for a 7-game series against the Washington Wizards?
I am.
I'm ready.
And I know the listeners are.
We're ready.
People are going geeked out on Celtics Twitter, and I'm all
yeah,
for it.
I'm a little pissed off that this game is on Sunday at 1, also because I wanted like another day of hype. I really wanted another day of anticipation to build up the I can't wait for this to start. Like, it sounds weird, but like I like that kind of like a little bit of words through the media, a little bit of, you know, something.
They each take a practice day. They get asked about kind of the conflict or the bad.
Yeah.
People. Markieff Morris says something stupid. It gets people.
Yeah.
Up. Like it definitely could have used one of those.
I want a little build up. I want a little, you know, it's like, yeah, you just want to have the whole song and dance. You want to be taken out to dinner. You want to go to a, you know, get flowers on a day. Yeah. You want to do, you want the whole show. You don't want to just pop into the end. You want the atmosphere. Come on, NBA. Anyway, so if you are ready for the series, then you can show us that you're ready for the series by subscribing if you haven't already. Search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. Just search Locked On Celtics. If we are not there, tell me and I will crack some heads and get us there wherever there is. If you are a subscriber, 5-star ratings and a sterling review would be much appreciated. That helps us out a lot. You know, it's nice to see us climb the rankings on iTunes and, you know, lets more people click on us and become subscribers down the road. So here it is. That's your bonus podcast previewing the Celtics Wizards. We will be back tomorrow after the game. The game is at 1. We'll be recording afterwards. You'll hear that Sunday night, and we'll be here throughout the rest of the series, the offseason, all of it. We're here for you Monday through Friday and sometimes even extra. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, J. King and John Corral.